Somebody can time me up. So, I start now. Hi, good afternoon everybody. I'm Sajid. I'm from School of Computing and Information Sciences from Florida International University. I'm going to present the paper, Application Performance Modeling in a Virtualized Environment. Here are my co-authors, my academic advisor, Raju Rangaswamy from Computer Science, Kaushik Dutta from College of Business Administration, and Ming Zhao from my department, the Computer Science Department. Okay, let's get started with my presentation. Okay, so here is a picture of, or it's a snapshot of a virtualized host. So it's a data center, and I'm focusing on a particular host of the data center. That's actually, there are three virtual machines residing on that host, so VM1, VM2, and VM3. And what's been happening is that all the virtual machines are using the same resources, the same disk, network, CPU, and memory, and so on. And within each virtual machine, what's happening is that within each virtual machine, there is one application running. Each application can have different performance metrics. For example, the application per one may have transaction per second, and application two may have response time, or application three may have throughput. So each application may have different performance metrics and different priority levels based on the service level agreement. Now, what is the job of a data center administrator? Now, the job of the data center administrator will be to allocate resources in such a way so that each application can receive its target performance metric, and apart from that, in contention, it should distribute the resources in such a way so that the priority values are met, so that in contention, it will give more resources to an application that has higher priority than an application which has less of priority. In order to do that, a database administrator must know what should be the performance of an application running inside each virtual machine at a specific allocation value. Because the resources are shared, it needs to know, because and one performance of a allocation of one application may actually affect the performance of other application running in other virtual machine because the resources are being shared. So it needs to know what would be the performance under each allocation and competition level. So a performance modeling is necessary here to do this stuff. But what the performance, and there are several criteria that the performance model needs to be, the performance model has to meet is, let's talk about these two figures. It's, one is two hosts, one is underutilized host, one is overutilized host. Now, in order to save power, or in order to save load, in order to do the load balancing, what needs to happen, that some application or some application virtual machine needs to move from one host to another host. So that's called the VM migration, the virtual machine migration. Let's say we choose application 4 and it's being transformed from host B to host A. Now, the model should work in such a way that even if under migration, if the host configuration remains same, it should be able to predict what should be the performance of the application in host A as well. So what are the main challenges of dynamic resource allocation? Of course, the application performance modeling is really necessary to do the dynamic resource allocation. And there are several orthogonal problems also. Apart from this, is that that performance model needs to be updated automatically. Because the application changes in a dynamic environment, the load changes, or the configuration may change, or the code base of the application may change. So that, and the model should reflect those changes and update itself. And third most important thing is that dynamic resource allocation needs to happen in the data center with the goal of revenue maximization. So in this talk, I'm not going to focus about the last two bullets. I'm going to focus about only the application performance modeling. So here are the high-level pictures of my performance prediction model. So what is going on is that virtual machine is controlling the resources, and some parameters are affecting the performance of virtual machine, and that's being controlled by virtual machine monitor. That's the VM resource parameters. And you change the parameters and you get some application performance metric. All those data are fed into this performance model. And after that, what is going to happen, that administrator chose a specific allocation value, and it, and the performance model will tell what is the predicted application performance under the under certain allocation. So that's the overview of our prediction model. So here are the key contributions of the paper. First, I talk about the most significant parameters that affect the application performance in a virtualized host. Next is that we evaluate or we show that the application behavior is really complex in a virtual machine environment, and we evaluate several modeling techniques on those benchmarks, on those applications. And third, we experimentally show that one our specific or our chosen modeling technique, that's artificial neural network-based modeling technique, actually provides reasonable accuracy in a Zen virtual machine environment across a diverse range of benchmarks. Okay, so here the rest of the talk goes as follows. First, I talk about the parameter selection. Next, I will talk about the modeling in detail. Then I will evaluate. Then I will experiment. Then I will show the experiments in the evaluation section. Then I will finally conclude and talk about the future work. Okay, so first important thing, that in order to do the modeling, which is most important, is that you need to choose the parameters correctly, the parameters that actually affect the application performance or the input parameters to the model. So how do an administrator choose a set of parameters? So here are the things that needs to be addressed. First, it should known to resource usage, non-resource usage behavior. What we mean by that is that it should actually represent a whole set of hardware that actually affect a performance of an application. So for example, there has to be parameters for CPU, there has to be parameter for memory, and disk and network as well. Those parameters must be easy to control or be observed by an administrator. And in a shared host, it's not straightforward just to control the parameters. We need to account the competition as well. So the parameters must account the competition in a shared environment. And after that, the more important thing is that, as you know, that the modeling complexities really grow as you increase the number of parameters. So it's better if we keep the number of parameters as few as possible. So we actually work towards this goal, and we choose the parameters such a way that it's actually as few as possible. So it should be minimalistic. But you choose a few set of parameters, but your modeling accuracy cannot be sacrificed. So it should be highly accurate as well, and it should be application agnostic. So here, we are not talking about modeling a specific database application or a specific web server application. The chosen set of parameters will work in any type of application running inside a virtual machine. Now I'm going to talk about each type of hardware, the parameters affecting the each type of hardware. First, I'm talking about the CPU. So here are the two school of thoughts. I mean, what kind of metric we could use? First is the utilization, and next is the allocation. So here are two different schools of thought. Now, the utilization is, so what CPU utilization does, if you want to model with the CPU utilization, is that you train the model, you measure the application performance based on certain utilization levels. So you say that that's a 20% CPU allocation, and you measure what's the application performance. So that can be used with the CPU utilization metric. But the problem with using CPU utilization is that it cannot be controlled from outside. You cannot really control what the CPU utilization of an application can be. You can control by changing the load of the application or changing the application semantics, but then we violate the application agnostic behavior of our modeling. So what we really focus is the CPU allocation. That in a virtualized environment can be easily controlled from an administrator interface. So we choose CPU allocation as our control knob. And in Zen, all the virtual machines use credit scheduler, and from an administrative interface or a DOM 0 interface, you could change the CPU allocation of a particular virtual machine. That's called a cap parameter, and we we instantiate cap parameter as the CPU allocation degeneric parameter. So cap actually provides a bound to the utilization of a CPU utilization of a particular virtual machine. So it may not be work conserving, but it actually provides a control interface to the administrator. So memory utilization, the same problem is there as with the CPU utilization. You have the same problem as about the controlling thing. But on top of that, the memory utilization can be really inaccurate because you never know because of the unused page cache nature. So even with the same, let's say it has, if you measure the usage, memory usage of a particular virtual machine, even with the same memory usage, the application performance could be different based on the amount of page cache, the amount of memory is being allocated by two page cache. Instead, we use memory allocation as our control knob. So what virtual machine, virtual environment allows us that it can dynamically, you can dynamically allocate or a certain memory to a virtual machine at runtime. So you, I use the Zen memset interface from the DOM zero to allocate memory to the virtual machines. Okay. But this has an interesting characteristic. I mean, because this cannot be partitioned easily. There are not widespread available mechanisms by which we can partition or allocate a specific IO bandwidth to a specific virtual machine. But there are techniques by which you can prioritize IO requests coming from a virtual machine at the level of OS scheduler. But interestingly, the prioritization is not sufficient. Prioritization alone is not sufficient to model the disk usage characteristic. Because why? Because the disk is shared, and you need to think about the competition level as well. So, on the top of prioritization, so even with the same priority, an application that could perform in a different way based on the available bandwidth that is given to the virtual machine, and that available bandwidth is affected by the competition from other virtual machines that's actually running in this at the same host. So we incorporate the competing disk IO operation, that is the disk IO operation coming from all the virtual machines except the targeted VM, and we incorporate it in our model. But this is very different from a CPU utilization metric, because in the CPU utilization, we are focusing on the particular virtual machine, the usage on the particular machine. But in here, the competing disk IO is not the usage of the target virtual machine. It's the usage by the other virtual machine. So it's an exogenous parameter to our model. In Zen, all the disk IO from our virtual machine is actually attributed to a block back process. So you can prioritize block back process at DOM 0 with the help of INET. And with Zentop's tool, you could measure the competing disk IO operation. Network behaves the same way as disk, so we need a prioritization parameter. That's a CPU nice parameter for Zen, and the competing network bytes per second can be observed with the same Zentop 2. So we need a priority value plus a competition value. It's the same as disk. So now we select now there's a picture of how the parameters are controlled in a Zen specific environment. So you have CPU cap for CPU and the memory that is controlled by virtual machine monitor, and all the IO is going through the DOM 0 and through a specific block back process, and you observe it from the DOM 0. So now, yes, I'm talking going to the modeling section. How far am I in time?
Yeah, 10 more minutes.
Okay. So let's first talk about our chosen application. So we choose a bunch of representatives that represent all types of hardware, or mostly most kind of hardware. First is the Sysmex CPU suite, that is actually CPU intensive. We chose a random write micro benchmark, that is memory intensive. And there is Postmark, that is IO intensive. And of course, we choose an OLTP benchmark that combines all the things, the CPU memory as well as IO intensive. So why is it challenging? Because there is a nonlinear characteristic nonlinear output curve with respect to the input parameters. So the outputs of the application is changed in a complex nonlinear fashion as we change the input, as we vary the input parameters. So for example, for the memory intensive benchmark, it's as the memory is reduced, if the throughput of the memory benchmark is dropped super linearly. And even for the OLTP benchmark, there is a high dependence of memory on the transaction per second of the OLTP benchmark, but that dependence is really nonlinear, or it's not following any specific curve or pattern. So it behaves differently at different input ranges. So there is a few basic steps that need to perform in a modeling. First is the data collection. We need to collect output of the application on a different range of input values. After that data is collected, we separate the data into two steps. The first part of the data set would be used for the training the model, after the training is done, we test the accuracy with the separate data set, that's called a testing. If the desired accuracy is achieved, we stop, otherwise we iterate. The same process is iterated, and there are several, in the paper there is the details of how the algorithm terminates. So here are the basic modeling approaches. So one is a very familiar regression family, the regression analysis technique. We tested with linear regression and the linear regression with the quadratic terms and the linear regression with pairwise interactive terms. And there is another class of techniques, that's the evolutionary technique. One is the fuzzy modeling and another is the artificial neural network. Those are the most commonly used. Apart from that, there is the genetic algorithm. So in this talk, I'm going to focus about the artificial neural network and show that it really works in our environment. So here is a table of accuracy values. That's the first, and here is all the results are percentage errors. So the first three rows are the regression family, and the last three rows are the ANN family. And what is really interesting, and I provide the median and standard deviation across all the benchmarks. So what the observation here is that there are high errors coming from the regression family, at least the regression technique we used for our evaluation, but a specific ANN implementation that the ANN ELIAS actually provides a reasonable accuracy. The median errors are in the range 1.16% to 6.65%. Okay, so now I'm going to focus on the ANN itself because it provides better accuracy. So here are the three key parameters that actually that are important in modeling ANN. One is the hidden layer, other is the hidden neuron. So to come up with the specific number of those two, we tested with several combinations of hidden layers and hidden neurons, and we found that these chosen values work well for our accuracy. And the one more important thing is an activation function. So that actually maps how the output should be, how the output should be in presence of the inputs. So we tried with, in the previous slide, we tried with several activation functions, I show only three. In between that, the ELIAS activation function, that's the sigmoidal activation function, the efficient sigmoidal activation function that actually works well. And ELIAS function has been studied to be effective in modeling complex nonlinear instances. So here are the experimental setup of the machines and the specific Zen version or this I used for my evaluation. Now to emulate this competition, what we do is that we create a separate virtual machine and with a specific memory and cap, and we run a random read operation inside this virtual machine to create contention. And the number of ops are varied to have different ranges of competition. So here I show the error distribution curve for the OLTP experiment. So in the X, each row is specific to ionized value, and each column actually corresponds to a specific IO contention. And within each subgraph, there is a cap value, and in the Y axis is the memory. So each cell actually represents what is the error value at a specific allocation. What is good thing about this error graph that the administrator, while choosing a specific input combination, may feel confident if the error corresponds to a wider region. So the wider region corresponds to better accuracy, the darker region corresponds to lower accuracy. So if the input combination corresponds to a white region, he may be, feel very confident in choosing the location. And if it corresponds to darker region, he may have to test run it again. What is interesting here, you see a correlation in the third column. So there is a high correlation of co-allocation of darker region. So we try, we tested that actually what, why this error is coming from. It's coming from that there are few points actually, few training points actually in those regions, but we didn't do the experiments to allocate more, to input more data in this range because of the overfitting problem. So what is usually happening is that the global accuracy is reduced if we put more data points into our training set. Okay, next is the influence of training data set size experiment is that I choose a percentage of data that is used in the final training data set and show how the training accuracies actually behave. So we choose 20% to 100% of the final, 20% of the final data set, and all the data set are random. So what is interesting from this graph is that, and we plot median error as well as 90% error. What is interesting from this graph is that the accuracy is achieved even with, or acceptable accuracy is achieved even with only 60% of the final training data set. So here are some deployment overhead numbers. The largest training data set we use for OLTP is 180, and the training time is only 34 seconds. So what it means that it is really suitable to apply our ANN-based modeling in a real data center environment where the administrator needs to change the model continuously, but it doesn't, it won't take a longer time to model based on the ANN. Here are the conclusions. We motivate that the application performance modeling is really a challenging and necessary task. We identify the key parameters that affect application performance. We show that virtualized application behavior is complex and nonlinear. We also show that our tested regression family incur higher prediction errors, but our implementation with area activation function in ANN actually gives low median errors. So in future, we'll incorporate, this is a static model, what we talk about is a static model, but in order to deploy it in a real environment, we need to figure out the mechanisms to do it online model updating. So that needs to happen. And there are several other challenges. We only took few parameters that affect application performance. There could be other parameters as well, like CPU cache allocation and contention. So in future, we may incorporate additional hardware parameters. And overall, all those modeling techniques should be used to dynamic resource allocation for SLAB's revenue estimation. Thank you for your attention. I am more than happy to take the questions or comments. Hello?
I think you're doing okay on time. So, probably you started a little bit slow, but then you cut up, so that made it good.
Yeah, in the beginning.
It's always the case, so. So, to start with some questions, I guess.
You go to slide 22.
Slide 22.
Here?
Yeah.
No, go back. Yeah, this one. I think why the error is more clear, that particular argument was kind of
shaky.
We could just say that, okay, why do we should represent this graph, right? We don't need to talk about the specific why these black errors are co-allocated in the system.
You can explain some interesting general trends that the audience can observe from this error distribution. And you want to show the things that you are doing good, but the things that you are doing bad, don't matter, we have this trend.
Okay.
You just question, right? You give me in bed up. Just kind of interesting.
No, I think it's good to talk about the darker regions first. I think sort of the rest of it is light, and then there are these few regions which are dark, and there seems to be a pattern there. Right? So I think that I like the fact that you picked on those, but I do agree that the explanation could be
better.
I don't really call him an experiment. I think when you say that, it's kind of obvious that we don't know, okay, what kind of hand will.
Actually, I was rushing. I know the answer, but I was rushing.
And I don't really see what you want to explain. In the end, what I got is that we didn't do very good, so there were some problems with that. At least you should have first highlight what is the good thing that we can observe from this graph. And then you tune down a little bit and say, oh, this is the areas that we are not doing very good. But first you have to show the things that are interesting. I don't see that.
So in the this parameter selection.
Okay.
So one thing that comes to my mind is that in VM environments, actually most of the disks are not located in the VM in the host, but they go through network I/O.
Yeah.
Right. So how does this? I mean, I know you have a network parameter, but will this be enough to capture all that most of that network activity is due to disk or at least some part of it? And probably the question is, can you be able to distinguish which of the network activity is inherently network and which is network due to disk?
Well, it really depends at what level of OS scheduler the OS decides to send it over to the network or to the storage. If it's sent after the level of IO scheduler, after the level of IO scheduler, we definitely know what is going to, if it's coming from the disk or if it's coming from the network.
So I guess the other way of looking at this is that at what level is your solution for, do you anticipate the solution for resource management, dynamic resource management, to be applied? And then you can answer the question based on that, from that perspective.
Okay.
Where are you applying?
Our monitoring tool, rather.
Monitoring tool, also resource redistribution mechanism. And at that point, can you distinguish between network attached storage access versus locally attached storage access? And I guess the other part of the question, can you actually model the performance impact of network attack?
Network attack meaning what? Meaning the physical conversion disk is network attack, or the virtual machine disk is network attack?
The virtual machine disk
are network attached.
But it can be a local disk.
Could be a local disk, but in data centers, one popular configuration is that disk is remote.
We can do that over ventilation, sure. The same thing.
I think his question is that in that case, everything will be considered as a network traffic rather than as a disk traffic.
I think the first thing you need to state maybe is that we haven't evaluated the network resource yet. We feel that it would probably be, we could probably model it with the same accuracy as we model local disk access, and that's something we would be looking at in the future. So you could say that if you don't know the answer. See, that's a standard answer that you can use. If you don't know the answer, I mean, instead of making something up on the fly, you can always say that that is a very important question, and we are either currently looking at it or we plan to look at it in the future.
That happens a lot.
And it's not bad.
At least you know that there is a process in that network file, down zero file. You can do the same thing, same trick with that.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that in the paper. You can also include it in the backup file.
So my other question is that in all your experiments, you just model one application, but I believe that modeling two or more applications is a lot harder.
No, what we do is that.
Model adapt to that?
What we do is that we model separately.
Yes, but would the model adapt? So would the model be the same? That if you have model, when you put those applications together.
Well, the only thing that will matter in that case is the allocation, as the competition. So in that case, we will only consider if instead of two VMs, I have five VMs. So all, if you model a particular virtual machine, all we care about others is the competing network and disk traffic coming from all the other virtual machines. And with the help of that, we could model the target virtual machine.
But I'm guessing they will, since they're also competing for CPU, you would have.
But CPU, the thing is that CPU is hard allocated. It's a hard allocation. So one CPU cannot affect the one virtual machine cannot affect the CPU usage of other virtual machine, provided a sufficient CPU allocation is given for the DOM zero.
What
is the
CPU scheduler did you describe?
In disk or
CPU?
Credit scheduler.
Credit.
Okay.
Is it work conserving or non-work conserving?
I don't know the answer.
If it's work conserving, then there will still be some level of competition.
So here we are assuming a non-work conserving scheduler to enforce the hard limit.
I don't remember, but the happening first in Friday is work conserving.
Yeah, it's work conserving. Yeah, the implementation is work conserving.
But the cap parameter itself is not work conserving.
Yeah, but then there are still competition if it's work conserving. Okay. Because the moment they decide this virtual machine is idle, so next launch you have a virtual machine. Maybe the next moment this virtual machine become actually. But you cannot carry this if you pack
it. It's non-work conserving, because when you put a limit on a certain virtual CPU, that's all it cannot get more than that.
But sometimes even the other kind, it can have, you could even.
So it's non-work conserving.
I don't know. If you try to double
check. I'll check, yeah.
If you have a cap, then, I mean, otherwise the cap doesn't make sense.
Depends on how far you depend on cap.
Cap is a hard allocation. You know that in credit scheduler that there are two parameters. One is the weight parameter and one is the cap parameter.
I know, at least if you use the other scheduler before the credit scheduler,
it's proportional to some?
ACDF. Yeah, ACDF. ACDF. We can also set cap. But you can set another parameter to determine whether it's working or not. So, but the bottom line is double checking. So how are your thoughts? Can you go to slide 10? Right, so let me say it's just our audience. So you're saying that CPU allocation is better than utilization because you can control CPU allocation. But we know that there are a lot of approaches that are actually using CPU utilization for proposed anomaly. And including virtual machine performance model.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you choose CPU allocation? Why do you think CPU allocation is not good? We already know that there are
Well, another argument I made in my talk is that what we in the CPU utilization, you cannot really enforce it from outside. That's the first thing. But you can enforce it by what you can do is that changing the load in the application itself, so that it can achieve different utilization level at different points of time and measure the application performance metric under the utilization level.
So what people do with CPU utilization based approach is you either create a model that describes the relationship between the performance of the application and the CPU utilization. So you know that in order to achieve this level of performance, what is that allocation idea to give for this virtual machine? And the other way is you directly control CPU utilization. You do some kind of control-based approach. So I think that the right answer is this doesn't apply to your approach, because you are doing it differently. You are trying to create a model that can tell you, given this CPU allocation, what is the performance I can get. That is what you are doing. It's different from the other way around. The other way around is, given this performance, what is the CPU allocation and it.
Okay.
And then you can decide the allocation. So you're doing it in a different way. So what I'm trying to say is, don't criticize the CPU utilization based approach. Mm-hmm. There may be people sitting in the audience that are doing that. It just doesn't apply to your approach.
Yeah, exactly. The application of
this model is different than the application of those models.
Right.
There it's more for maybe capacity.
I think it's the reverse approach from performance to utilization rather than.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason you need such an approach also is for capacity planning. So if, let's say that you want to host an application with a certain performance. If you know that for this performance I require a certain amount of CPU, then you can go and buy machines or find machines or allocate CPU for that application as per that. But here we are talking about different application.
There are a couple of things I really want to ask you. First, for some parameters like this, you don't have this, the kind of allocation that you have like for CPU. Right? So what you're
deep,
doing,
I have
on this, you don't have allocation.
No.
Well, equivalent, you don't have like IO throughput allocation. You cannot say the VM has this amount.
No, that's all right.
You are simulating allocation based on competition and priority.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, that you know, and the second thing is that I mean, you could have allocation for this the way you have allocation for CPU, for example.
How do you do that?
For CPU, it's just giving CPU time per application. For this, would be the same. You give CPU, you give this time per application. You give more this time, you give less this time. You could do it, right?
No, but even with the help of that, we cannot really enforce what will be the bandwidth available to that's the thing actually priority scheduler does. What it does is actually it gives more time to a specific process.
Yes.
In disk.
Yeah.
So that's the job of the priority scheduler. But what I'm talking is that scheduler is not enough in disk environment.
Yeah, but I mean apart from this. I think scheduler you have another type of scheduling where you give some specific IO time to an application to a VM. So you could put a hard limit on the amount of time it has on this. That is, you could limit the
true. I mean, ideally what should happen is that if there are available techniques, straightforward available techniques to allocate this kind of bandwidth, we would have done that.
Okay.
But at the current moment, we didn't have any implementation to control IO bandwidth. That's why we chosen this separate approach.
Okay, that's better. I guess that's a better way.
Okay.
Yeah. There's something I didn't write, and it's really consistent. It's some minor stuff. I mean, you talk about memory and you talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
For this, you talk about bandwidth. And for memory, you talk about size, right? But you could also talk about bandwidth for memory. So I'd like something more like, instead of talking about memory and this, things like that, to be more specific, this bandwidth and memory size.
Okay.
Memory capacity.
Memory
capacity, yeah.
Okay. That's a good.
I don't know about the experiment, I would like to have an idea of this, I mean, some vague idea of the amount of input that you have.
Amount of input in the model?
I mean how many points you have.
Okay, that's...
I have absolutely no idea. Yeah.
It's that retail is in the deployment over it. Is for OLTP, I have the, for the training data set, I have 180 points.
Okay.
That's the most. I mean, other application uses lesser points.
Okay, and how do you distribute these points? It's random? I mean, you have many parameters. How do you distribute the different loads for all the parameters?
It's just you choose, let's say you can, let's say there are administrator says, or you want to just vary your CPU percentage from 5% to 50%. So what they do is that at 5% generality, that's a 5, 10, or 10% generality, 5, 15, 25, and 35, and 40, I change this allocation values at different points and observe what is the application performance. And use this set as a training mechanism. So that's how I cover the input parameter ranges. The same thing goes for memory. I try it at different levels, let's say from 100 megs to 500 to at 100 meg granularity. That's how I divide the input parameters and observe what is the performance metric and put this combination into the model.
Maybe you can do this experiment that has give a rough idea how many data points we are talking about. And then you have a size that we use even stuff for training on that. Yes, I think we have a question to what is their size?
Okay.
Because each data point is a completely different run.
Yes.
You might have a one summary slide. I mean, this slide is actually it's a subset of the big table. Right, subset of this big table for just the AN and LU.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get to the experiment, and in that table you can also add these details, for instance, how many points were added
for
each training, for testing.
For each benchmark, right?
For each benchmark, and you can show the average accuracy. And then you can say, okay, this is a summary slide, but we look at and specifically this, what is this, OLTP error distribution. The discussion of the other benchmarks are available in more detail in the paper. But you could have that, you could use such a table to provide the information that's recovered.
How many training sites, how many testing points, right?
Mm-hmm. And you can also show the accuracy once again, so people can focus on the AN and Elliott accuracy.
Okay.
You said we have one run per point.
Mm-hmm.
And while the application is running, could you vary the CPU? And if you do that, will you have such inaccurate results?
So what I do is that I didn't change the allocation until the application one run of the application is finished. If that is finished, I collect that data. After that, I change the allocation again. So it's not really in the middle. If we change the middle, of course, the application performance will be different. But that's the part of the dynamic model operating.
So you keep the allocation and the competition fixed for each run.
Exactly.
And you run these applications can run for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, for 3-4 minutes. Or
exactly.
I want to say that the performance metrics that you're looking at are the overall performance of the application. Not
instantaneous performance.
Right. So every time you go into measure the overall.
Six, right?
Yeah. Why is the writing just large?
I don't know.
It's just like, not EPS, I just put the
EPS.
Yeah, well, I was going to suggest that you want to animate the slide. So
yeah, I would do that. In,
so
yeah.
The candidate parameters predicted performance can be in the next step.
Okay.
So first you create the model, right, with all these inputs. Once you have the model, then you use it.
For the candidate parameters and predicted.
Yeah. You're going to redraw this in
the Yeah.
I
think this applies to all the EPS figures. You have to look at the results. You probably have time to read your own thing. The EPS should be fine if you include it as a figure, but if you do a snapshot, then it's
maybe... No, I just add the file. That's
EPS?
It. Yeah.
You can see the form.
So this is PowerPoint. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem.
You use Open Office.
Really, because I think PowerPoint compares EPS to bitmap. So,
okay.
But maybe if you have a solution, you have an SVG or anything else before producing the EPS, it's better to import and make it a PNG.
Yeah, that's actually true.
You could just export just PNG.
Yeah, because I agree that the fonts are not looking good for the
EPS. Also, I think slide 3 will have some animation.
Slide
3, when you do the migration.
Okay.
You can just move the application from one box to the other.
Yeah.
I find it quite clear. Why do we have to talk about the book? Yeah.
I think I was the one who suggested to add this slide because migration is something that's used commonly, right? And that's
know, that's something that people have been looking at. And then before you do migration, you need to figure out whether migration, what is going to be the impact of the migration, what is going to be the impact of this problem. And then the performance model actually becomes a...
If you are not modeling migration overnight. We are not modeling migration overnight. We are not digitally a strong platform to this.
Right.
Yeah, so the assumption here is that
I think you need to emphasize that
we are not talking about the migration overhead. My assumption is that if the host configuration remains same, we could apply the same model in, let's say, in application 4 as it is running in host B. It should be the same model as in host A if the host configurations are the same.
And this model I think if
you mention the assumption, that's fine. I think as long as the physical host configurations are the same, the model is still valid.
And so now we have this figure, somehow they are, most of them are not centered. So in this, you can tell go to the right. And some of the figures, they are also towards the car.
I'm not running for an art competition.
Is this okay, this one, so for here you need to have a title,
and you
can move the rest of the figure down.
Okay,
this has a
window.
Go to slide 3. You need to make it a table and put the 3x3 table, then the middle row, then march all the middle row. In the middle row, put the same migration. And
okay.
Other four cells, you put the bulky 3 boxes. That will make it alive.
Okay.
Maybe I changed the layout.
So okay. I have also a couple
questions.
So in slide 14, I think it was a little bit overloaded, and you actually didn't spend much time explaining. So for me,
I was rushing. I mean, I could remove the slide.
Right.
If you don't need it, better remove it.
Because, you know, I keep thinking about what is in the next slide, and I need...
Okay.
Yeah, and that also happened to me in the heat map that you have later on. Yeah. I don't know if you really need all the rows or all the columns. So it seems to me like you focus more on the third column.
No, but I need to show it because I need to tell you
that
why
the
pattern. There is a pattern,
okay.
And why whiter region is better.
Okay.
For our confidence.
Once again, I think Bing would have a comment here that the figure is not standard, which I agree with.
Like
if you had to move the heat map to the, at least vertically to the center somehow.
Okay.
For this slide, it may be easier if you start with a single heat map. So it was going on a single heat map.
Yeah.
Zoom in, right? And then you put all of these back here.
Yeah.
Because we have 3 dimensions here, right? So for a single heat map, there are very 2 dimensions.
Yeah, another thing is that when you were talking about the sharing the disk or partitioning the disk bandwidth, I just was thinking about the semi-preemptible scheduler that I think Raju did at some point. So I don't know if that is helpful, if you want to mention it, or if you need a technique that you can do better, just mention that. That's what I was thinking, I don't know.
Bandwidth?
Yeah, because if you need to partition this bandwidth among...
I think that's sort of orthogonal to the word. We are assuming that we cannot partition this bandwidth.
You're assuming that you cannot partition.
But if we can, we will go back to the allocation level, just as we use for CPU memory.
And that's the motivation for using other parameters such as priority for disk IO and level of computation for disk IO.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you do this slide 2?
Slide 2? Okay.
Right. So, as one, you use CPU as a concept, as a robot. But CPU is like a local system.
Yeah.
You may want to say F1 and the throughput part is 3 things in QPS.
Okay.
And the F3 is
IOPS.
F1 is 1 after the F2.
What?
Is the F3? Yeah. Come out F1 here.
Oh, this is just a slight typo. I'm sorry.
And you want to make a distance, so for F1 priority, you also want to capitalize C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And put it on the next row.
Okay.
No, these things are really really important, because someone is looking at your slide, they somehow, you know, human tendency is to look for all these problems. Okay, and then they're looking at the something wrong,
distracted.
And then they forget about the main point for why they're sitting there, right? So it's really important to have all of these things perfect.
Yeah. Well, actually in my case I guess it's a crazy case because I'm really picky. So the first thing I saw in the slide was that you didn't have an enter in that priority. So you didn't have three lines.
There were two lines here and three lines in
the other. Oh, okay.
These sorts of things, some people get distracted.
Well, I think it's just all part of the profession. So I think it's
helped.
So
include
slide
17. Okay.
So whenever you have a bigger only slide, you also want to make title consistent with the other slide. So move the title to
center.
Oh, okay.
Use the same font size as the other.
Yeah, I think you really need to look at all the slides, the centering, the titles, and I think the fonts, and I think you need to go through a very careful revision of the PowerPoint to make all that nice.
So
Yes.
I think it would be easier if you return this slide in graph instead of this. Just highlight the things you want to return using graph.
Graph?
Yeah,
how?
Graph, you have a bar graph, for instance, that can show the difference between different modeling approaches arrows. That would be easier to see than using this table. But
you're
not treated everything in this table. Using graphs to make it friendly and easier to understand the organization.
Yeah, but that could be true, because the numbers don't, you have to read through a lot of numbers before you get the relative performance improvement. But with the graph, you can just
bar
get the level.
Easy to
do.
Spelling is too bad.
Okay?
Yeah.
Under CPU. Yes, treated.
Oh, that's for something else. Don't worry.
Yeah, the
reservation,
I think the font size
is more. Yeah, the font size over there
are the reservation
there. Mm-hmm. Okay, let me. Which font size?
The reservation 3.1. Yeah,
this is kind of
small.
Okay, I'm
telling you. So I think you can totally do this in the You can have the bar. The
I think it's better.
I
think the tax bar chart. Or something.
Yeah. And can go to slide 21.
Slide what?
Next one.
Sorry?
The next one.
Oh, the next one.
Yeah.
And this slide probably.
So 21. You don't need number. You don't need 5.
Number 5.
Yeah. The
title.
I think 5, 6, or 7. You don't need.
Oh, okay. In the title of the slide.
Oh, okay, number 5.
Well, you is a 1, 2, 3, 4, you have 5, 6.
Bro, I don't know, can you add the port in the call?
No, I think I changed
You forgot to remove the numbers. You have numbers in the backup slide also, so if you're showing that, make sure that you remove the numbers from the backup slide. So also, you were saying that there's some, in this slide you were talking about the heat maps as subgraphs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better to just use the term heat map instead of using subgraph. Yeah, so I think this is something that you should talk about, the error, high error ranges and why that's happening. I think it is always good to talk about where we have problems and where there are limitations to the approach.
Well, in the paper we say that there are probably limitation in training mechanism.
Yeah, so the training mechanism can probably be improved. I mean, if we make such statements, I think it's not negative.
Yeah, so I think I have a question. I think it's that I didn't understand it.
Which?
In 17?
This one?
It's like 17.
Oh, 17. 17. Okay.
Yeah, what is it that you're training? The parameters you are reading? Instead of this, that you say training.
Training is that, you know, in order to use a model for a prediction,
mm-hmm.
you first need to fit it with some curve some data so that it fits into some curve or function.
Okay, and then you test it against what?
With some, so what happens is that I collect a bunch of data,
uh-huh.
I separate the data into two sets,
mm-hmm.
One set is used to train the model, another is to use to evaluate the accuracy.
Oh.
So how do you evaluate the accuracy? Once you train the model,
mm-hmm.
you use those input parameters and you get the application prediction with the model and you test how close your predicted metric with the actual metric you got with the experiment.
Oh, okay.
So that's the evaluation section. That's the testing section.
So you're testing it against the real model.
Exactly.
So, and you get the real value because you have access
to the
program.
Sorry?
I mean, because this program is running like all the time, or
no, it says that if we show that the, let's say, average accuracy across all those testing data is good enough, or our desired accuracy is achieved, we stop.
Okay.
Otherwise, we do an iteration, we collect more data and try to fit train again and do the testing again.
Okay.
Yeah. So one thing that you can say here is that this is a high-level view. The actual detailed training process is in the paper if you're interested.
I'm sure
so
I mentioned
it. Simplistic, the way you describe it right now, seems too simplistic. For instance, say that if you test it and if the accuracy is not good enough, what does not good enough mean? Then you say, we collect more data. How much more data? What kind of data do you collect? So all of that information is in the paper. Someone in the audience is. So whenever you are giving sort of high-level information, you can point to the paper for more details.
Another thing that maybe you want to change that test is a small thing by saying that you stop that it is okay and then it's not going to work. Because it seems like you always go back. I mean, that's...
No, actually, I said it in words.
Oh, yeah, I mean, in words you say it.
What is the other term?
Actually, I have a decision graph. I want to make it really very simple. I have a complete decision graph in the paper. 23. Yes.
Why do you think this is huge error percentage for the CPU benchmark?
In 40%? It's because it's that I told you that the data set we collected, the sub data set we collected, is a random representation. So we collect, so there is a final data set, that's 100%. And we collected 40% of the data chosen randomly. So it may not represent the whole range of input parameters. You know, let's say you need to change the input parameters, the CAP parameters, the CPU parameter from 5% to 50%. But it may happen your random collection, chosen collection, it's only confined to 5 to 15%. 5 to 15%. In that case, you completely ignore the other portions. In that case, your accuracy could be really degraded because you are not covering the entire range.
But when you have 3%, like 20%, shouldn't be higher.
No, it may happen that 20% is actually lower number, but it's actually the chosen data set is actually all the points, covering all the input combinations, or covering most of the input combinations.
Yeah. Covering the range.
Covering the range, rather, I would say. So it's not co-located to a specific range. It's a more uniformly spread. In that case, you may have better accuracy. If you're actually representing the whole input range.
Question.
Yes.
What is the 100%? And second...
100% is the final training data set we use for accuracy in the NNLU.
Yeah, so what's that?
The final training?
I mean, the
numbers I showed in the graph... It's actually with the 100% data set.
For the OLTP.
Yeah,
for the
So it might be a good idea to make that table that I told you. So with the 100% information for all the different benchmarks. And then when you go to this graph, you can say 100% represents that information in the table that we looked at before. And then we sample 80% at training points at random from the training set, 60%, 40%, 20%, to try and understand how the accuracy varies as the training set change, site changes.
Okay.
And should I be seeing the problem of overfitting?
Where?
I mean, the range should be large enough so I can see overfitting problems.
Beyond the
100%. Yeah, there is the overfitting problem, but I'm not showing it.
But here we don't see it.
No, because that 100% I collected is based on a training algorithm that actually incorporates those overfitting syndromes.
But here, you have a overfitting graph, right, in the paper?
Sorry?
You have a overfitting graph in the paper, if I remember.
No.
No, I don't think we have one.
So that 100% we collected actually considers putting more data as well. But we stopped at some point because we are having an overfitting syndrome.
Okay. But if you have that data, would be.
We don't really have it.
Oh.
Okay, so any other questions?
But I think since you have Altman, you have all that size in that stage.
Yeah.
So rather than you use this circle tonight, to show the flow of the presentation. Maybe instead you can just use this Altman slide.
What I do is I choose Altman slide and I make like
it's bolder.
With different colors.
With different colors.
So one that is.
That will be easier for you to see what has been covered so far and what's on to the next.
Okay.
That's a standard practice. It's just more than the
circle. Yeah. So towards the end, you sort of rushed through the last few slides, especially conclusion and this deployment overhead. I mean, regardless of how much you probably want to time yourself at every 10 minutes or in 5 minutes, and then make sure that you speed up before the conclusion slide so you have enough time for the conclusion.
Okay.
The conclusion is very important.
Okay.
And also future work. So
how much time?
I think I spent enough time in future work.
Conclusion
is I rushed.
But conclusions, you rush through that.
Yeah.
How much time do you have?
22, precisely.
22?
22.
Yeah. I mean, they say that 25 minutes including...
questions.
Including questions. So I guess it will be around 20 to 22 minutes. I think the maximum I use, can use.
Yeah.
The other thing which I noticed is that in the first, in the second slide, you were talking about priorities, and then in the next slide and the future two or three slides, you talked about revenue maximization. Right, so there is sort of a disconnect. Are you going for prioritization or revenue maximization?
Or what I could do in the first slide, instead of priority values, I could say revenue per hour.
Yeah.
Let's say
just be consistent. I mean, if you want to go for priorities and don't talk about revenue maximization.
Okay.
Right. Or if you want to talk about revenue maximization.
Talk about revenue.
Yeah. Exactly. That's
Maybe you can reduce some content from the parameter selection section. You do spend at least 10 minutes before you go to the modeling part. So, and I think the modeling part is actually what's the most interesting component that we have talked. So, you spend 5 minutes before the outline comes. So, 5 minutes for introduction. And then another 5 minutes just on parameter selection.
Okay.
So, I think you can spend that.
5 minutes in parameters, 5 minutes in
what you see.
In modeling, 5 minutes in introduction.
That's what you see.
Oh, that's what I see.
Yeah. So that's why you have rush.
Okay.
If you can enter the modeling method earlier, that'll be better, I guess.
Okay.
So one thing which you could do to speed up the parameter selection is to, you know, this might not save a whole bunch of time, but it takes some time, is not to talk about Zenitor. Not to talk about the Zen specific parameters. Because later on you're not really using it, right? Or are you using it? Maybe you're using it at some point.
I mean, I could just avoid, right, talking about them.
Yeah. The number 12 slide, I think you spend too much time. Relative, where you're talking about parameter selection for this, you spend little time on CPU, little time on memory, and then you spend a lot of time on this slide. I think you can try to maybe prepare something, you know, parts more concretely for this slide so you can actually go through it more quickly. Certainly you have more things to discuss, but you can spend less time if you plan it better.
So will it be okay if I just remove the Zen specific things from each slide? That would save a lot of time.
I think we can remove it. Yeah.
Okay.
I think you can remove it.
Or you can just leave it there without matching.
Yeah.
That's
true.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Same thing you can do for the network parameter selection. You have spent another 10 months in this parameter selection, network parameter selection is quite similar, right? So you can leave the snap there, but go over to really think.
To modeling.
Yeah. You can still do one to spend the time listening to your results in your evaluation section, which you didn't spend another 10 months.
Also think about, you know, explicitly about the limitation and
I think it's missing a little bit.
That's true. Yeah,
that's important.
I mean, not to talk about all the related work, but just about the categories of related work that are out there. I think that's important.
So reduce the parameter selection, and you said that with the read.
Related work, one related work slide. Where should it come in after the introduction?
It depends on what you put in there.
Yeah.
Once you have the related work slide, then you can, you know, based on the content of the related work slide, if describing the related work slide requires some background information that you're going to provide, you know, midway through your presentation, then it's better to have it at the end. If not, then you know, putting it right after the introduction is fine. I think there was one comment which Ming had right at the very beginning about the allocation. I think he said that there were some drawbacks with using utilization as a parameter. What is the drawback with using allocation as a parameter?
I said it's non-local zone.
Non-local zone. Okay. So how do you deal with that issue?
How do you deal is that because we envision that the model will be updated automatically as the time progresses.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think we should have that in your discussion because I think, like Ming mentioned, I think there might be a question about the non-work conserving nature of allocation as being a potential problem, and then how do you deal with that needs to be addressed right at that point. So
okay.
People appreciate that choice better. Okay. I don't have any other comments. If it is, then that might explain why we were having, you know, weird modeling training points and testing points, because 20% doesn't necessarily mean 20%.
No, it doesn't mean that I observed. It doesn't mean 20%. It could be between 20, it could be 24% as well.
Would be 24%.
I observed.
I mean, 24% is still close to 20%, but no, can it be like 50%?
No, that I said. It cannot be. I tried in many data points. It doesn't go by far. If not very specific 20, it could be, but it would be around 20%.
Mm-hmm. Because if it's not worth conserving, there is no stopping from going all the way to 100%.
No, but CAT actually does it. Makes it a hard limit on that.
So maybe you're looking at it that it's worth conserving?
Yeah, I think it's a chance on the percentage.
But it's not displaying any work conserving behavior or too much work conserving. Okay. Anything else? I think you're doing pretty well. And once you incorporate all of the feedback, I think it will be much better also.
There are some comments. If you don't understand anything, stop there. Very
well. Mm-hmm. So you're doing okay. I think the related work is important, and you need to better manage time in some of the slides. So some of the slides you're going too fast, and others you're spending too much time. So I make a note of all of those senses. So I thought you spent more time or less time than you did. The visuals, you might think that it's not important, but I think it really talks about your professionalism, your level of professionalism when you're doing
it. So I think I need to do a little bit work on the slides.
You need to do a lot of work on the slides to make sure that all the fonts are nice. You have title slides everywhere. All the figures are centered. The fonts are visible. You need to go through that exercise. It's a little bit pain, but I think in the end people will appreciate your presentation a lot more than the way it is right now.
Okay. So about the talk is fine? About the talk in general?
The talk in general, so initially I thought that you were going a bit too fast, and for some reason you were rushed, and in that process you were sort of stepping on yourself while you were speaking, right? So you're sort of restating sentences and using some slightly wrong words, not the exactly accurate terminology. So what I would recommend is to, you know, this is really what I recommend to all beginning presenters. It is that if you can spend the time, it is really worth writing an actual script for your talk, a formal script. And Medha has done that, and I think it has helped us a lot. Write a, you know, just your whole talk, write it out. So then you know exactly the kinds of words that you actually need to deliver that material, the terminology that you need, and you read that over and over again, so you become completely comfortable with the terminology. Right? So for instance, application metric versus application performance are two completely different things, and you're using them sort of interchangeably, which is not correct. Right? So at some point you have to use application performance metric, at the other point you have to use application performance, okay, without the metric. So those are the kinds of things that although people can possibly make out what you actually want to say based on the context of the sentence, but still it's not perfect in terms of your delivery. So if you want to be perfect, you have to go to that level. Now one way to do that is to just
talk loudly about, you know, these concepts and make sure that you get all those terminology right. The other way is to write out a script, because with a script you have the advantage that you can hit backspace and delete and change. Okay. But you cannot do that when you're talking, unfortunately, right? So if you have a script, which I highly recommend in your case, especially because you're making these small terminology misuses, there will be a huge benefit to your delivery. And you just read through, you know, once you have the script, you read through it, you keep changing it, you can make it more interesting, right? And then I'm not saying that you have to buy hard the entire script and deliver it as is. But the more you read it, the more comfortable you will be when you're presenting. And never make the mistake of by-hearting a script, right? Because what will happen is that you will go there and you will forget. And when you forget, you'll become nervous. So certainly, I don't mean the script for you to by-heart and deliver, but for you to read enough number of times so that the terminology, sentence constructions, all of those things become natural, okay, at least for this material.
Okay.
I think that can help you reach to the next level. I don't know if you noticed, but did you notice you're sort of struggling for terms?
I think one or two times I repeated sentences, that I remember.
You repeated sentences, but also you're looking for terms, and then when you don't find the right term, you sort of use the approximate term, which is not the exact term, and then it has a slightly different meaning than what you intend. Those are the kinds of things that differentiate sort of a good speaker from an excellent speaker. Right, so, I mean, that's my feedback in terms of delivery. Other than that, I think you're doing fine. You understand the material really well. You have all the knowledge, so you don't have any of those problems. You're not going to be stuck with some materials, say, well, what does this mean? I don't think you have those sorts of problems. I think you have reasonable answers to questions. Don't be afraid to say that that's an interesting question. We haven't looked at it yet. And
I think the network is a choice question. I didn't have the answer.
Yeah. So if you have the answer, still you might want to, you know, think about the question a little bit more so you can construct your answer perfectly in a better way than to immediately start answering.
Right. Oh, I see.
Oh.